What is up? It is me, George G. We've got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Jim Beach. Jim is an award-winning entrepreneur, author, speaker, radio host, founder of the School for Startups. His newest book is Real Environmentalists. We had a great conversation that, of course, started with two truths and a lie. And then we got into the conversation about environmentalism and global warming. And Jim makes the case for how the biggest needle mover will come from entrepreneurs and capitalism. And he talks about why that is. He highlights some of the people that are making massive differences but don't necessarily end up in the headlines and why that is. And of course, we closed with not one, not two, but three awesome difference-making tips. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Jim, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please.
Two truths and a lie. Let's see. I sailed across the Atlantic when I was 18. I married one of my students. My pets have been certified by PETA as having the best pet names in the world.
Okay. Excellent. Wow, pets certified by PETA is having best pet names in the world. You sailed across the Atlantic?
Yes.
At age 18, you married one of your students, and PETA certified your pets' names the best names ever. Well, these are excellent. I know that you have a background in working with the ocean. So I believe that to be true. I know that you are a professor or have been a professor and an award-winning one. So that's not beyond the scope of possibility. And it's also believable that you have pets, but to have PETA certify a best name, I'm going to say that one is the lie.
I'm sorry. That one is true.
Tell me about that. Tell me how PETA certifies pet names or what these pets' names are.
Well, I've had PETA on my radio show countless times and various officials at PETA, and my last name is Beach, and so there's infinite names that can go with Beach that are funny. We've had Wavy, Ripley, Sunny, but then you can go all sorts of, you can get really playful with this. You can go clothing optional and call her CO. Or, you know, the pet CEO. We have Tiki and Coco are the cats. So anything goes well with Beach.
And oh, my gosh.
My favorite is clothing optional.
And for good reason. That is such a treasure trove for dad jokes right there, Jim.
It is. The dad joke central. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That is so great. That is so great.
So what do you think the lie is?
Well, I guess you married one of your students.
That's true.
That's also true. Okay.
That's not. She was 26.
Okay, I was going to say that's not impropriety, Jim.
She was 26, so it was all moral and stuff.
Okay. Well, great work. So you didn't sail across the Atlantic. The one piece of information I thought that I knew about you, I was wrong.
I only went halfway.
What might be the theme of my life? What happened?
We were only planned to go halfway. Went up to Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, Bermuda, and then back to Woods Hole in Massachusetts. So I did do oceanographic research on a boat in the middle of the ocean, in the middle of the night, you know, throwing nets over and catching stuff and measuring temperatures. And we were studying fjords and whale migration and all sorts of that on a cool 125-foot schooner called the RV Westward. So
fjords and whales. That sounds awesome.
It was fun. How much fun can an 18-year-old boy have sailing the ocean?
Yeah. I think that sounds great. Okay. All right. Are you still married?
Yes.
I just realized I just asked a terrible question.
Well, it depends on when this is going to air, I guess.
Right. Yeah, great point. As of recording, you are still a married man. Okay. Well, Jim, really well done. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations. Well, what is top of mind for you right now, sir?
I'm excited because I no longer lose sleep worrying about climate change. I have quit worrying about it. I have realized that it's going to be solved. And the idea that we're going to end as a species, or even the idea that we're going to be massively damaged and even forced to live in a way that we don't want to. I don't think those things are going to happen. And so these people who are not having children because of the environmental crisis, or who are crying because of the environment that I see on TikTok, I would just like to tell them no. There's actually really encouraging data out there, really encouraging news, amazing hero people that are solving the problems as we speak. And it's weird. What I've discovered is so weird is that it's the entrepreneurs that are saving the environment. It's not the people that you would expect, the government, the agencies, the scientists, the PhDs. It's normal people who discover, oh, I just figured out how to make coral grow faster. And so then they go and start a coral growing business. Or I just figured out how to recycle alkaline batteries. You know, these people who are on the fields, in the factories, out there doing research underwater, those are the people that are making a difference. So that's my top of mind today. I can go a lot of directions from that, though. I have other things too.
I don't doubt that for a second. It's a fascinating thing. Do you have a recollection of what year An Inconvenient Truth came out?
Nah, let's see. Gore,
It's been 20 years, right?
yeah, well, at least. I would even say in the 90s, perhaps, but I'm not going to swear to that.
Right. Yeah, it's a quick internet search for those listening, but it doesn't seem like that stuff happened.
No, well, in the book, we have an entire chapter of things that didn't happen, that were projected, the sky is falling type things. And the list just keeps going on and on. And, when I look at it, the environment has actually never been cleaner. And people are shocked to hear that. Poor people, indigent people, tend to live pretty dirty lives. They tend to pollute quite a bit, the water and the air. And wealthy people tend to have cleaner places around them, and their societies tend to be cleaner. And so I think that, certainly compared to the 60s, we are infinitely cleaner. Do you want to go back to colonial times when we were throwing our poo out of the windows into the street? Do you want to talk about that versus today? I think that we are actually cleaner than we've ever been, and we're getting cleaner. And it's just like oil. I also believe, front of mind, that we will never run out of oil, ever. That's just a ridiculous idea to me. As a matter of fact, our proven reserves go up every year about 5%. That's proven reserves. That's what we still have left, and that's going up, not down. And so, a lot of the things that they tell us just aren't true.
You have had enormous success in business and have written business books and speak to Fortune probably 100 companies all the time about business. What motivated the book about the environment?
I met one of the heroes. I met one of the people and was blown away with what he has done with his life, and asked if I could write a book about him, and he said yes. And then I started writing the book and realizing he is a class. He is a group. There are thousands just like him. And I asked him if I could make the book more expansive and have him as one of the heroes, but include some other heroes too, to make the larger point that there are 216 companies in America right now that are for profit that are cleaning the environment, doing something to make the environment better. Air, water, land, something. Products, oil. All of these things are being addressed right now. And so you tell me part of the environmental issues that you're worried about, and I'll introduce you to the people currently solving that problem. So that's pretty encouraging. And he agreed, Wayne agreed that the book could be about the whole group. And so we assembled five superheroes and put them into one book with the common argument that entrepreneurs are going to save the world. That climate change is slowly being solved already, and the beautification and cleaning of the world is happening. You know, there's a big push recently about nuclear. Nuclear has been in the news quite a bit recently. Two news points. Trump and the UK made a deal for 12 reactors, and Google announced that they're building their own nuclear power plant because they need that much power for the AI data banks and the, you know, the LLMs and all of the data that we're using, all the artificial intelligence, the GPT and all of that. So, you know, I think that's progress. We're going to have fourth generation too. Right now, we're still on second generation. We're skipping third and going to fourth, which are so much cleaner. They're so much smaller. They get produced in a factory as opposed to getting built on site, so they can be assembled much cheaper and then actually certified and inspected. And you know that they're going to be safer. And they don't have the ability to melt down anymore and have a chain reaction. They don't use water anymore, so that's a great benefit. They use sodium, salty water, or boiling sodium to cool the reactor. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about anything dealing with the environment and the business. It's all exciting. So anyway, that's how I got into that book. Book number five was because I met Wayne Elliott. He is America's, the Western Hemisphere's largest ship recycler. There's over 100,000 ships floating around that are approaching their end of life. What happens to them? They either get sunk in the middle of the ocean in the middle of the night, and then all of the grease, oil, and asbestos just leaks out forever, or they get run up on an Indian beach and a group of Indians with no shoes go out there and try to cut it up, and about one of every 20 kids dies, or they end up at Wayne's facility in Ontario, where he is the only ISO-certified ship recycler, going out there and taking a 1,000-foot aircraft carrier and returning it down to its natural parts, except for the batteries. So then he spent $20 million, George, listen to this, of his own money to figure out how to recycle those batteries. He did it, and now he has a bunch of patents on battery recycling. That's what's an amazing story. That's a guy who's saving the earth. He didn't know it, but he's slowly out there making the world better while Congress is fighting to make it more difficult for him.
What a world-class cocktail conversation guy right there. What do you do? I recycle ships.
Plus, he was drafted by the Mets and a football team, too.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he is just one of those people that you look at and you're like just blown away what he's accomplished in his life. And he's on his third business, which is healthcare and, you know, body supplements and putting into our body what God wanted us to put into our body, natural things.
Well, let's protect this human being at all cost. That is awesome.
Well, it's my job to write about him and talk about him.
You're doing your part. Thank you. So this is one of the hardest issues, one of the most lightning rod excited issues that we have. And some people, I doubt you're going to change their mind, even with all the evidence in the world. And then there's probably a lot of people out there, that movable middle, that can be influenced. So I guess I may be answering my own question. What are you hoping the book accomplishes?
Well, this is maybe the most interesting thing. When I announced the book and put it up and started writing some of the other environmental authors to see if they would like to talk or if they would write a blurb for me, two or three wrote back saying, "Ooh, you better be careful. You're going to get kablobbed." I mean, they were, you know, I was like, "What do you mean? Am I going to get shot?" And they were like, "No, but you're going to get attacked. People are not going to like your idea." And so I accept that. It's sad because those are the people that I'm trying to talk to the most. The people who are worried the most need to be calmed the most. And there are people who want this as an issue. You know, this is a political issue, and they want to be able to use that cudgel to raise money and scare people and stuff like that. Those are bad people who, you know, I think they're preventing all sorts of good solutions in all parts of our economic and political problems. But, you know, I hope this is, let's put it this way. I hope I get attacked because that means enough people will have heard about it and have been exposed to the idea that I'm starting to get attacked. And that would be wonderful. Then even more people would hear about it. You know, maybe I should fake get attacked on purpose and then put out there, I got attacked. I got attacked.
Ah. So that saying goes, if you're taking a flak, you're over the target kind
exactly.
of a thing.
Exactly. Yes.
Which really makes sense. I know that in the book you talk about some of the villains that you feel like are bad actors, and we could point to probably most any poverty, crime, homelessness, as there's entire industries that have grown up around addressing these. But I have a sneaky suspicion that a lot of these are just bad actors who are trying to capitalize on these kinds of things and have no desire nor the ability to actually do anything about it, when in reality, the people that can do something about it are the creators, are the builders, and these are the people that you are highlighting. And you talk about people rising up out of poverty, increasing the middle class, that has the effect of changing habits and burning cleaner energy, and just it. This is the solution that so many people want, but they maybe haven't realized or not willing to entertain that it will be capitalism that really does solve this.
Yes, when everything that you stand for is opposed to capitalism and growth, you will have a problem with this and the thesis of it. Yes. So, you know, one of the things that I did with the name was to create a lightning bolt with the name. The name of the book is The Real Environmentalist. So that means that there are unreal environmentalists or something opposed to real, and that's not good. And that's probably what I'm calling, you know, a big chunk of the people. And there's a whole chapter bashing academics. There are a lot of celebrities that we bash in the book. And we certainly bash the system, the UN perpetuated fear mongering system. And I think that by attracting even more attention with a, you know, provocative name, hopefully more people will be exposed to the idea. And I would love to go and fight and have a good, friendly argument with anyone who disagrees with me. You know, I'm not trying to take away any of your points. You know, I'm not disagreeing with anything that you're saying, except that maybe your professors should spend more time trying to monetize their ideas. You know, one of the stories in the book is I have a PhD academic is one of the heroes. He is a professional algae expert. He's a PhD in algae, whatever. And so he found some commercialization for algae and had started to make some money. And his dean came up to him and said, you know, we don't really like what you're doing. You know, people are talking about you behind your back. You need to stop this. And he was solving how to get microplastics out of our society and out of our brains. And his dean was telling him that that's bad, you know. So that kind of thing, I do want to change. I want academics to spend, you know, their valuable grant dollars studying a use that's going to make my world cleaner somehow. Don't write another paper arguing about who wins the Nobel Prize along with Al Gore. George, did you know that they're still arguing about who was supposed to be on that list? You know, it was Al Gore and other environmental scientists is the way it was announced. And there's still people saying, I'm one of the others.
Yeah, me.
I'm one of the others. You know, and so it's just craziness. You know, papers that no one reads, you know, we shouldn't be doing that. And we should be encouraging all of the other infrastructure to sort of play our game. Because if you really want to solve the environment, here are the people who are doing it, you know. And I would love if the academics, the scientists, the NGOs, the governments, the celebrities all tried to promote how cool our heroes are, you know.
It's all really funny, right? How how you have the dean coming up to somebody who's doing something potentially really, 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 really important and like, oh, you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. We don't really like what you're doing. But that's not surprising. And maybe this is something we should have talked about at the front. You are somebody who obviously wants a clean planet and a healthy ocean and all of these things. In fact, you have done more to study and promote this than 99.9% of human beings because you sailed halfway across the Atlantic and there were those whales and the fjords and all that good stuff. So you're not saying that this isn't a problem. We need to ignore it. You are taking a very measured, practical approach, saying not only is it a it's shit, yes, it's a problem, and there are so many more ways to address it than simply just trying to scare the heck out of people.
Yeah. So the first three pages of the book are, I love the environment, I promise. Here are some of my stories in the environment and times that I, prove that I enjoyed being in the environment. And then I sort of transition into, but I didn't drive my Tesla here. Now, do you still believe that I love the environment? Or I don't personally hunt, but what about the people who do go into the environment to hunt? Is that bad? Or here's my personal example, George. I love to go snowmobiling. It's one of my favorite things. My dad and I used to go snowmobiling every year in Montana. It was the way we really bonded. We had great times together. Mom didn't come, snowmobiling is loud and dirty. Is that a bad thing to do, to go into the national parks with loud, noisy machines to enjoy the bison? It's a very fine line between where you all of a sudden become not an environmentalist anymore. I joke in the book, if I have a Tesla with a gun rack in it, what am I? And
Texan,
then I talk.
I think.
I'm sorry, what?
Texan.
Yes. And then I sort of talk about performative environmentalism. The people who perform and say, I am a strong environmentalist, a guy who lives two houses down, he's always talking about what an environmentalist he is, but he drives a T250 pickup truck around town on concrete all the time, on pavement. He's never taken it on dirt. Why does he have a T250? He's not a construction worker. He sells medical equipment. He doesn't deliver it, but he's more of an environmentalist than I am. That's just because he talks more than I do. Yeah. He is the hypocrite. And we certainly bash the hypocrites in this book. We call out quite a few people who have made audacious claims about their environmental awareness levels, but then go hang out on a super yacht. There's Jeff Bezos is the worst when it comes to super yachts. Did you know that his super yacht has a support super yacht that goes with it?
I love everything about that.
He has one boat for him, and then there's another boat to supply that boat, with more toys, more
it's like
staff.
The nesting dolls.
It's just ridiculous, So I would go if I was given the chance. I'll hang out on the support boat. I'll even work crew on it if you give me a week.
Sure, sure. The origin story of that is amazing. For those who are not familiar, they built it so big that it couldn't get under this bridge in the town. Anyway, I wanted to get your take, Jim. It's something that I think about a decent amount, that being an advocate versus an activist. And I think it's really good for all of us to be advocates. But when we're activists, we become zealots and we just become blinded to any other potential solution.
I 100% agree with you. Yes. Activist doesn't have a good connotation anymore in our society because they've done, some of the activist groups make everyone else look silly. And people who cry wolf make the rest of whatever movement that is look silly as well. And so I'm very, very happy to advocate for what I want. I will not activist. I will not go out of my sofa to make a sign.
Love it.
I'll write a book about it, though.
We will write books about it. Well, Jim, you've already given us a lot, but we're ready for that difference-making tip. What do you have for us?
Anything
at all. Yeah. Dog names.
What about this? You should start a business but do it differently. Do not worry about creativity. 93% of businesses are copies, so just copy an idea and blatantly steal it. Okay. Number two is only spend $5,000 to test whether it's a good idea or not. If you've spent $5,000 and have a customer, you've probably proven that it's a good idea, and you can probably get the money from somewhere else at that point, maybe even your customers. And then point number three, passion is only reserved for the church, the synagogue, the mosque, and the bedroom. You don't need to love your business. You just need to like it more than working for the man. And by that standard, you don't need to like it that much. And so I've eliminated all of the reasons that you have not started a business. Your reasons were I don't have an idea. Your second reason, I don't have the money. And your third reason was I'm not, I'll do what I'm passionate about. I can't make a living woodworking or whatever. Those are your three reasons that you're telling yourself for not starting a business, and I've just eliminated all of
Well, I think that that is great stuff. That definitely gets it. Come on.
them.
No ideas, no money, no passion. Not good excuses. Get to work. How does the saying go, Jim? Good artists copy, great artists steal.
That's right. That's right. I went to architecture school, and one of the first things they pointed out was that there have not been any like original architectural ideas since Imhotep, the guy who built the pyramids. Imhotep is famous for putting a pyramid in front of the Louvre in France. He copied the exact angle of the pyramids in Egypt.
Well, there it is. Well, Jim, thank you so much for coming on. Where can
Thank you.
people
I appreciate it so much, George.
learn more about you? How can they engage? Where can they get their copy of Real Environmentalists?
Of course, on Amazon, look for Jim Beach, and you can go to jimbeach.com and go to schoolforstartupsradio.com to hear my daily radio show.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show Jim your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Pick up your copy of Real Environmentalists on Amazon. I'll certainly link that in the notes. Go to jimbeach.com and learn everything or engage more with Jim and everything he's working on. And then check out School for Startups Radio. And there it is. Thanks again, Jim.
Thank you so much.
Finally, friendly reminder, there's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.